This meeting will come to order. The first bill that we're going to hear today is House File 1477. Representative Lindgren, and you want to bring up your folks and we'll get started. And then also, as you're getting settled, I just want to make an announcement that tomorrow we're only going to have a meeting for 45 minutes, so we're going to start promptly at 10:15 and we'll adjourn at 11 because of the governor's state of the state. So if those of you who are here want to let your fellow colleagues know that come late, I'll try to remember to announce it again. All right, Representative Lindgren.
Good morning, Chair. And at this time, Chair, I'd like to move House File 1477 to be in front of the committee, and I will.
Actually, someone else has to move it. I'll move it for you.
Oh, okay.
77 before the committee.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. And at this time, what I'll do is I'll turn it over to Monty Hammett for. Okay.
Thank you very much.
And just be free to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for inviting us to be here today to share information with you, and we really appreciate you and your committee's help and assistance. If you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce this, our Superintendent of Schools. This is Stuart DeJarley, Superintendent. We have Troy Miller with the DLR group of our architectural group that's here with us. We also, Madam Chair, would like to recognize our chairman of our school board, Arnold Pemberton, school board member Keith Defoe. And they have played the major roles in us in keeping and working for our children at Red Lake. We come before you today to the Education Finance Committee to continue a process that the legislators give us the charge to do in 2002. As you recall, we have to be probably the best partners with the state of Minnesota because we need probably the most help and have the and don't have all of the resources as other schools have, as has been depicted by the state of Minnesota Department of Education. In this process, you recall, Madam Chair and committee members, we started the rerouting of the education facilities and trying to eliminate mold, try to eliminate bad air quality, provide additional classroom spaces and needs for the school district as our growing population, which is indicated in the Department of Education's review and comment analysis. And also, we want to thank all of the committee folks here, and a special thanks to Governor Pawlenty for including us in his budget for the $22.130 million for the phase three of our phase four projects. This process we have been working diligently with since 2002 with the Department of Education and Department of Finance on coming to the development of a phased approach in carrying out the intent of the legislature, which granted us the $500,000 pre-design and planning monies in 2002. And with this amount, Madam Chair, we have looked at the due diligences and making sure that we have the preservations of the assets of which your committees have been so fondly supporting over the past number of years, and for us to bring our facilities up to date and looking at the expansion of our population, growth at Red Lake, so we can have quality buildings and provide quality education. Let me just deviate, if you don't mind, Madam Chair and committee members, that in 1993 we completed our elementary school, as funded to you folks here, and with that, in the time from going from the old facilities to new facilities, we are very, very pleased to report to the committee today that we are a three-star academic in academics in math at the Red Lake Elementary School. And We have just great, dedicated teachers, administrators, school board members, and most of all, our little students want to learn. And this has been fantastic. So we want to thank you again for giving us these opportunities. In this course of doing the pre-design and studies, Madam Chair, we have put together two volumes of detailed analysis, detailed work for the committee folks who are on the committee. The chairs of all the committees have received these. It was difficult getting one for each committee member. They were quite costly, and again, we try to be make sure that the dollars and cents revenue. And if we need more, whatever, we'll be glad to provide those. A couple of things, Madam Chair, committee members, that are a little different with our approach here than what it was 2 years ago. We've had time to plan. We've had time to strategize. We've had time to bring more empirical data to the floor and for the committees. One of the things, working with the State Department of Finance and the State Department of Education and the folks, was they wanted to know what potential impact may have on the school district for future use and the development of future buildings. In this process, we put together a financial spreadsheet based on the school's independent audits and carried it through to 2013. And when there, you'll see that in this spreadsheet, you'll see them in there as to how it relates in the feasibility of these projects with the student enrollments. In addition to that, there were some questions about with the state and looking at the cost of the buildings and developing the cost of those facilities. When we looked at this, we sat down with the State Department of Education, State Department of Finance, and we brought our architects, our construction manager people to the table with the board and with the staff at Rub Lake. And we developed on that, Madam Chair and committee members, a analysis, and I think we had 13 different school districts within the state of Minnesota as to the new facility and the construction cost to do comparative analysis of bases of that. So we were comparing the actual cost of what the construction cost would be. We found some great variances in some of them. Some of the best schools that we tried to do, we could not do it because they had different categorical areas. Some had land purchase within their construction costs. Some had FF&E in there. Some had site survey costs. They had various costs rather than just construction costs. So what we did to try to identify for the state is what the actual construction costs are, then the support costs in these 13 projects, so we could come up with a figure that's going to be rational, reasonable, and equitable within the development of the school facility for Red Lake. In addition to that, Madam Chair and committee members, we also, in this planning and phasing process, have carried this through to the year 2009. And before you have some handouts that we put together in this little summary packet of our master plan of facilities. And we kind of described in the first page a little bit about the history of where we were at. The Housing 12-4, the original amount in 2002 was a request for $40,100, $40.1. Of that, we were able to get, and they sent us back to the board. We got 12-4, and we're showing you in here also on the spreadsheets what we're doing with the 12-4 and how it has been is being expended. And I'm very, very pleased to report, Madam Chair, everything is on schedule. Our early childhood is completed. The elementary is completed in Red Lake and Panema. And we're on schedule and getting ready to fire up the boilers at the high school this next week. And it's all done within the budget and below. So we're real proud to be able to say that the cost of our square footage and the analysis of what we use has been very effective in that analysis. Also, Madam Chair, we have a sheet, and we'd like to put this up on the board for you, kind of to walk through the summary schedule of the public schools projects that you have in there. And we have Mr. Miller here as the expert on this, and he can help us and walk us through this. And I can't know if you can see it, but there's obviously the colors here and show you what it means. And we put the dollars and cents on these along with the time elements, so the committee will have everything before them.
Members, you have a packet, and in that packet is the same material that is on the board. So if you can't see the material that's on the board, it is there for you to walk through with, as Mr. Miller begins to talk about it.
Madam Chair and Representatives, thanks again for the opportunity. To step back a little bit to talk a little bit about what Monty is.
As you talk, each time you talk, you need to just say, "I'm, you know, Mr. Miller from whatever."
I'm Mr. Miller from the DLR Group, and we're the design professionals that have been working with the Red Lake Public Schools. On the large format sheets that you have in front of you, there are a couple of different things that I want to point out. First is phase one and phase two, the colors that are in olive green and yellow. Those are projects that have either been complete or, as Monty mentioned, are currently under construction. Those projects represent, as you look across, total dollar amounts that you'll find underneath or on the line that is project budget. For each of the projects that you'll see,
if I stand up, can you hear? Because I pointed out it here. Is this all right, or?
I'm sorry, you have to stay at the microphone. Or you can, you know, there's this corner microphone right there if you can.
For each of the projects, you'll see we've broken it down into a number of different categories. The first one on the top is enrollment. That's the number of students who will be attending each facility for each of the given years that go across the timeline. The next area or category runs across is the square footage per building. And the third one is the project budget. Again, that's the number that we have spent on each facility to accommodate the students and make the modifications that's been completed in each of the buildings. The drawing that I have here represents this brown piece up in the corner is the Early Childhood Center. And that was just occupied a couple of years ago. The orange facility is the elementary school. Down here you'll see Panema. And the two buildings on the other side represent the high school and the current middle school, which is right now currently combined on one site. And then the lower diagram there is the proposed middle school. As part of the $500,000 planning grant, Some of the legislators questioned the growth in the demographic numbers that were provided last session. And going back and doing a review of how many students are actually coming forward or enrolling in the school district, actually our numbers and our projections that we had provided last year were actually conservative. And the numbers that we're actually seeing coming into schools have been continuing to move upward. And so the enrollment growth in the district is growing faster than what we had originally projected. And that's why you see the difference from last year to this year. But what we've done is, by dividing the project into four phases, what we're looking to accomplish is provide the school environment, grade appropriate, obviously, to accommodate that enrollment growth. And each one of the phases kind of indicates a trigger or a planning trigger in which the square footage that's needed to accommodate that growth isn't determinant on when the project is funded. It's when the construction sequence is complete. And so right now we have a large number of kids that are currently in the elementary school that will be moving into middle school and then continuing on into high school, and we phase the projects in that manner. Another thing that we've been looking at in terms of enrollment growth is the fact that is this stable or is it going to decline at some point? And the work that Monty's done in terms of doing the research and looking at number of births and things of that nature, we're going to see that there is a plateau that's coming, and that's what we're building facilities for. And so when you look through these lists of things, you'll see where we're going to continue to use and utilize portable classrooms to accommodate bubbles and things of that nature and make sure that we're not overbuilding. The other thing we've done is by moving the elementary school and some of those components into phase four, as we continue to move forward through this plan, we can make slight adjustments and modifications as necessary to make sure, again, we're not overbuilding as we move into phase four. But phase three is really what we're talking about right now, and phase three is the need where we're accommodating the kids who are going to be moving from elementary school to middle school, and then the growth that you see in the middle school moving to the high school will be accommodated by converting the current middle school that's now attached to the high school with last year's funding. That whole complex will become a high school to accommodate all the kids that as they move through and as they progress will be in that particular facility.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Madam Chair, committee members, one of the things that I think is very important and that Representative Lindgren's bill addresses this is to look at how the phasing of the projects and the utilization of the current existing funding from phase two to the phase three coming up. And the additions and let me refer to the sheet where it is the high school, the red light high school, middle school complex over there. The green area is the projected five classrooms that we have projected for this next coming year in addition to a small mechanical room. These are tied together in that south portion. You'll see a wing. That's the old 49 building that had the mold, it had the bad air in, and we'd like to have that, and that calls for being demolition.
Mr. Hammond, how much of that is going to be demolished? Is it all of the orange area, or is it the darker orange?
Which area? It's just that little white block area.
Oh, I see. Okay,
that's the old 49 area. It's got the tunnels, has the mold in it.
Okay.
I want to stress again the importance that we think that, Madam Chair, committee members, is making sure that there's no demolition of any portion of the building over the last 10 years of that, so we're protecting the preservations of the asset that you folks have helped us fund for these facilities. There will be some renovations to it, but no demolition. The only other part of the demolition that will come in the middle portion of that orange park, which is the old elementary school portion, and that'll be basically kind of, if you will, pardon my expression, kind of gutted out, using the subfloor things in there to fill, so those are okay, but the walls are kitchens. We got elementary showers in there and bathrooms that were built in the late 50s, late 50s it was. Madam Chair, the other aspect with this is the green we show, and it shows if we were to demolish without having the language put in the bill to be able to establish those additional five classrooms, that means then that we would lose classrooms in the new area that you see on the, which is being developed in the, which is the yellow portion of the high school, which you can see the yellow, I think, up on the board there. Now about ready to complete. That's the one we're ready to start the boilers on next week. But we've tried to make sure that the phasing of all of this is done in a systematic way, so we also want to keep sure that make certain we don't interrupt the students' education in the process and eliminate any rooms until another series is done. So that, we think, is a very major part. And then also part of that middle school, we've taken the mechanical aspects and used, we had, I think it was, $11 million in 2000, I think it was, and we put on the new classrooms at the end of the middle school. The mechanical systems and the drainage systems in there now are tied together, so we didn't duplicate the drainage system from the old buildings into the new buildings and have to remove those out of the old buildings. So we've been diligently working on this in these multiple types of phases, Madam Chair and the committee members.
Mr. Hammett, we do have a question. Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, my question can wait till after the presentation.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay, go ahead.
There's been a couple of questions regarding some of the costs associated with the project, and we've gone through a number of those with the Department of Education, the Department of Finance, and the Department of Administration as well. Krauss Anderson has been the party responsible for developing the cost estimates. They've done all of the oversight of construction for the school district for the last, I think it's 5 years. And they also were the party responsible for overseeing construction in Clearbrook-Donvick. And so in the development of the cost estimate, you'll see that the cost per square foot of the building, the pure construction cost, is a little bit more than the average across the entire state. But what has to be kept in mind is the fact that for the northern third of Minnesota, you've got much higher snow loads, you've got 5 foot deep footings for frost lines. In the case of Red Lake, on the lake you have to deal with uplift for wind, so those are some structural elements. The transportation cost of materials, which are highlighted in the numbers as well. All the concrete, for example, comes from Bemidji. So you've got admixtures and things of that nature, plus the transportation costs, which adds almost 20% to the cost of concrete, just getting it to the job site. And so all of those things kind of compound themselves to add more cost per square foot. The biggest difference, however, between this project and a number of the jobs that we are comparing to is the site costs. And that is, when you look at this project, we need to develop ball fields and all of those amenities for outdoor physical activities, for FIAD, some of the athletics, so on and so forth. A large part of it also has to do with the costs of concrete and bituminous, which require much deeper subgrade excavations because of the fact that there's poor soil almost everywhere we've looked in the area for finding a site large enough to accommodate a school of this magnitude. So we have a lot of over-excavation for site to make sure we're building a firm pad for the building to sit on. We're also having over-excavation on all the roadways and parking lots to make sure, again, that the bituminous will hold up and last and not succumb to the freeze-thaw cycles and things of that nature. And again, all of those numbers have been developed by Krauss Anderson from their experiences in the area and their relationship, you know, with the district and knowing what it costs to get materials up to the particular drop site.
What is the cost per square foot?
The cost per square foot, if you're looking at the building, is a little over $150 per square foot just for the building cost. If you're looking for building and site, you'll see some of what people have been taking is the square footage of the building and dividing it into the total project cost, and those numbers are, I think, a little over $200 or around $210 per square foot.
And, Mr. Miller, is the average per square footage for a building more like 125, something like that?
It varies dramatically. What we did in the work that we
tried the statewide average,
to pull together, statewide average is approaching about $140 a square foot.
$140, okay. Is that for all or just the...
For all.
So, but if you just look at the building construction...
That would be for building construction.
Not for the...
Right. Okay. And that would include the development costs, which are permits, fees, design costs, all of those things layered into the construction.
Mr. Miller, is there... It seems to me when I was reading the background, and maybe this is for Mr. Hammett or for the superintendent, I saw that there was a siting fee or a building a fee, and I forget how much it was, $500,000 or something, and I was wondering why the state has to pay a fee for putting a building on land that where the state is pretty much, you know, just, you know, giving you a building, per se.
Madam Chair, committee members, I think that you may be referring to the Tribal Equal Rights Opportunity Act, which is a federal act, and that's a mandate by federal law that the 2% can come off the top. And what that does, it ensures the members any work availability and provides for the training, and that's where we get a lot of our carpenters and their skill field.
That's not what. I'll go back and I'll find it and I'll talk to you later about it.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with that.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Just another siting fee or our permit fee for putting the building on. And I was thinking, why do we have to pay a permit fee? You know, when we're kind of, we could save some money.
Sure. There's a number of permits that get paid. Probably the largest permitting fee would be paid to the Buildings Division to do a code review of the documents, and they do a thorough review of the drawings, and they charge a fee. There's also county fees and assessments that go with it, and so we try to lump all of those things together.
We can talk about that later then.
We'll be glad to furnish the information, Madam Chair. Meeting room.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Well, let's see what we've got. Are you ready to ask a question? Representative Biscuit.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hammett, I have in front of me a press release from January of 2001 in which Red Lake proudly announced to be securing a $27 million in private financing to construct a 40,000 square foot water park, a 150-room all-suite hotel, arcade, business center, et cetera, adjacent to Thief River Falls Casino. I wonder how successful that casino has been.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd be like to refer this to the superintendent, please.
Good morning. Stuart DeJari, Superintendent of Red Lake School District. Red Lake Tribal, Red Lake Nation has a casino out in Thief River Falls called River Road Casino. It is somewhat, bringing in some revenue, but apparently there, in the past, there was some mismanagement in the building of that building by the Red Lake Nation. Red Lake Nation is separate from the Red Lake School District. We are a separate entity from the Red Lake Tribal Council. We have no control over, casino funds. A lot of the casino revenue that is made by the River Road Casino is programmed back into the elderly program, nutrition program on the Red Lake Nation. As far as it being successful, I think we probably could get more money out of it, but, it's a location that's out in the boondocks, Thief River Falls around that area.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Superintendent, it's obviously successful enough to have enticed a private investor to invest $27 million. I guess I'm curious, are the students in your school not members of the Red Lake Nation, or are they members of a different nation?
Yes, we are members of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians. As I said, we get very, the school district gets very little revenue from the casino, and it was reported in on that paper, $27 million, cost overrun came to $41 million, and the tribe is paying that off right now, as I understand it, on a monthly basis, from casino revenues.
Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, just a final comment, and I guess I have a question of how the nation works. I mean, it's almost like saying we have students who are citizens of the state of Minnesota, and yet Minnesota school districts are separate from the state, and I'm not quite sure of the relationship, and it's one I guess I need to explore further.
Representative Biskins, the Red Lake School is a public school. It happens to be on the Red Lake Indian Reservation. And that's kind of the situation that we're in, as far as the relationship with.
I agree, Madam Chair, but there's also special contingencies when it comes to the sovereign nation and its relationship to the state and federal government.
That's certainly correct, Representative. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to inquire a little bit as to your enrollment levels. I know you've got some on here. Are some of these duplicative, or are all these total numbers for each grade level? And then how much growth is that actually? You said 56% growth. Do you anticipate that to continue? Are you building for continued growth? Are you just building for now? You know, as we invest in this, what is the level that you are looking at?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we have taken the empirical data on the student enrollments, and I think that we've gone into that in depth in looking at it. And as Mr. Miller had mentioned, we had a couple of bubbles, And the first bubble that we have now that's coming up is with the middle school. Looking at that, the amount of students that we projected and the information was passed out last year, the non-bonding bill year basically, reflects the total number which is reflected in the review and comment that was delivered to the State Department of Education this last year. Yes, we have continued growth in our classrooms. You will see in our stat data, we had like 1,547 students that we listed in there from K-12 this last year. We did the analysis of December 3rd on the impact aid statement, the number of students in the early childhood was not a part of impact aid, and we are over 100 more students than we anticipated. And one of the things that you notice, and this is where we're coming back to the second bubble concept in 2004 or 2006 of looking at the additional classrooms onto the elementary. We scheduled that purposely in our planning. Should we have erred somewhere in that birth records and the bounce, which we're averaging about 155, 160 births a year, then if that doesn't change and it stays the same, or if it goes down drastically, then there wouldn't be any need to tie the middle school together, or the high school, or the elementary and early childhood centers. And so we're strategically planning for that, but the numbers all indicate that this is where we're going with it. We've just got a tremendous amount of growth in there. We have 186 Head Start children, and there's approximately 10% out of that number, but the 10% that are not eligible because of income criteria of families. So that's basically 9 more classrooms that will be needed when those little early childhoods get to kindergarten. I think we have six kindergarten. I think it's six sections of kindergarten now. We're going to need at least 3, maybe 4 more.
Madam Chair, one quick follow-up.
Yes, Representative Cora.
In the event, is middle school then sounds like it's your priority, it's your next big bubble. In the event that you didn't get the 33 and you got something more closely related to what the governor's recommended, would the middle school be your priority then? Would that be what you would use the money for?
Madam Chair, this is a discussion that has come up. We will be able to maximize every dollar. We may have to cut back on some things. We would like to have language in there like Representative Lindgren has addressed in his bill that would allow the school district to maximize its efforts for the students in the school district and maximize the dollars and cents that are given, so it all ties together. With this is a part of the middle school, yes, part of the high school. We think it's important that the portion of those 6 classrooms, because without that, the 2006, when you get into it, if we could go in 2000, this next come around, if that part is demolitioned out of there and we get this 5 classrooms, then the routing is the front door is where we're building now and where the main entrance to the high school would be. So we think it's very important that we look at the total structure, and I don't think we're not prepared. We need to talk to the school board and go back, and we have not gotten an answer to find out how the $22.130 million. We've been visiting with the state funds. We visited briefly yesterday with Mr. Meekins Lee, and we're hopefully going to find, you know, how they arrived at that. So we plan together with the State Department of Education, State Department of Finance, and maximize the best effort for the children in the building facility process through our planning process. We think it's important. The legislators, you folks, provided us with the funding to be able to, you know, phase this project, and we're trying to do this in the most reasonable, rational, equitable manner possible with this.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna.
Thank you.
Representative Hyde.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to change the course of discussion a little bit here. In regards to progress, student participation, dropout rates, graduation rates, where are we standing? Are we making progress in these areas? The reason I ask this question, I have a friend that teaches up there, so. Yes, Superintendent DeCharlie. As we look at the building projects throughout the last 3 or 4 years here, we've also, within the buildings, began to make changes, look at changes in our curriculum, how we approach attendance, how we approach getting our kids back from open enrollment. Back in 2000, we had about 380 kids going to open enrollment, and we're down to 240 now. So we're getting them back, and we're getting them back, like I said, by changing curriculum, hiring new teachers, looking at better discipline approaches within each building, the hiring of mental health workers to help the students in all buildings. We're also looking at right now, under the No Child Left Behind, improving our teachers to, highly qualified teachers, beginning programs with University of St. Thomas, a master's degree program in curriculum and education and instruction. And right now I've got about 40 teachers that are interested in this cohort group just from the Red Lake School District. We're also working out, we have worked out a plan with Moorhead State, University of Minnesota Moorhead, in working with our paras, and we have 45 paras right now going for a two-year degree in early childhood to help them maintain under the No Child Left Behind continued teaching, continued working in a Red Lake School District in 2006. So we have a lot, we're looking at improvements, not only trying to get better buildings and, coming down here and submitting bonding issues, but also working within the buildings and improving, those buildings from inside. So it makes it gives parents and teachers and other people a sense of, fixing the outside, but, and we're fixing the inside.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question relates more to how the taxation works from the Indian Reservation. What you got the casino, and I don't know what other kind of development there is, or other kind of businesses. I noticed in your materials the adjusted net tax capacity and also the adjusted marginal cost pupil unit is very, very low. And I don't understand, I guess, how the taxation for the reservation works in the state of Minnesota. We're looking at comparing this to other school districts, and it's very, very low. But I don't understand how taxation works. What comes into the state coffers from the reservation?
Madam Chair, Representative, Red Lake is different. Red Lake is different than any other reservation within the state of Minnesota. Red Lake is the only non-allotted reservation and the only closed reservation in the United States. It's the only closed reservation in the United States that we know of, or in the state of Minnesota specifically, that has a public school. We have very little taxable land, and that taxable land was garnered back around the turn of the century when the logging was heavy and thick to put a railroad in and house for the non-Indian staff that were running the railroads at the ends and for the logging. I don't know, but we get maybe $12,000 a year in taxes is all it's generated. And this work falls into this capital loan improvement program that was adopted by the state to help out so that we can meet the constitutional needs of the state of Minnesota as a public school district. And there is no relationship, as Superintendent DeJarlie had mentioned. The Red Lake School District is an independent school district with our board of directors, our superintendent, totally outside the realms of the Red Lake Nation and its political jurisdictions, and I think that's very, very good. And they're doing very, very well. The aspect also of this, and to deviate just a little bit to the planning, Madam Chair, if I may, that the superintendent mentioned briefly, the programs and these other activities that are coming in is also an involvement of the community. In the review and comment, you folks may have noticed, in our planning starting back in 2001, we didn't include, our planning process just wasn't the people you see here. We included, our spiritual leaders were included in that, our elders were included in the planning, our veterans were included, community members, teachers, and we think most importantly the students. And let me give an example. Last spring, we went to the student body. We had about 25, 30 students in grades 9 through 12, and we called kind of like a hearing here. What is it your students need? What do you see in there? And they come up with a beautiful list. One of their priorities was in health and diet. They said, we'd like to see a salad bar in our cafeteria. The superintendent and the administration put a salad bar in, and that salad bar's got longer lines than a regular bar. And the students, if we wouldn't have come from the students, we would probably would not have been there. This is the type of things. Getting back to your taxation, as representative, there basically is no taxation on a reservation, because it's all sovereign in trust land, and all the land in the Red Lake Reservation is held in common. And that started in the Dawes Act of 1886, which was modified and amended for the Red Lake Band in 1889. In fact, it was July 6th, 1889 when they amended that. And that amendment from that act precipitated the Reorganization Act of 1934, which, because at the 1889, all adult male members of the tribe had to sign off on the agreement that they would not agree to allotment, to, in other words, have private owned land. Mm-hmm. And if you'll see in other reservations that are privately owned, they have had a lot of tax distributions. They've had a lot of debates back about where the land was taken away. A male would come in and marry a female, get the land, divorce her, off they go. They end up with the land. These are very common in the non and allotted land concepts. And this is where you got the Taxation Act here about 1983-84, which the state was heavily involved with. But Red Lake did not belong to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have the town, yes, the Red Lake Township. It's a township like any other township.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, then the reservation is owned in common by everyone. Nobody has individual tracts.
That is absolutely correct.
And there's no property taxes as such, then, or there's very little land value, then, is my understanding, to bring taxes into the school district. Is that?
That is absolutely correct, Representative. The taxation line, well, maybe, like I said, maybe about $12,000 all taken in. And all of that property is within the village of Redby, where the railroad site and the sawmill was set up in late 1800s. And the tribe has been purchasing that land as it comes up or as it has been for sale over the years.
Okay, and so my question is this, as this land becomes developed, is there any kind of development going on? I guess the casino is one thing that comes to mind. Any other development going on? And the casino included, will that development raise the value of that property? And someday, will there be taxes coming off that to help support this school?
Madam Chair and Representative, let me back up just a little bit on this. The Red Lake Nation has, in its process, been purchasing lands other than which are held in common outside in different counties in the area. They put in some farming lands. They got some wild rice lands. They got some of these multiple types of lands. And they're paying a little over $60,000 a year in state taxes on the real estate of those properties. Now, this is off the reservation. This Clearwater County, Doug's jurisdiction, has got quite a few in the farming. I don't know the amount of the acres. There's some south reservation of the acreage, and these all are paid. All taxable lands are not put in trust and have not been put in trust and probably won't be.
One last.
Okay.
Just one last one. Is there any support, financial support at all, coming from the casino for the school? And if there is, can you tell me how much?
Mr. Hammett or
Superintendent Dr. Garland? Madam Chair, we do get some extent, you know, some money from the tribe, from the casino. It's minute. Maybe a club goes over to the council and asks for donations, you know, for a program. I believe we have Project Close Up that goes to Washington, D.C. We have 15 kids scheduled to go this year in April. And they, as a group, have went over to the council and asked for donations to help them with their trip. And donations come from the casino revenue. And I believe they got about $4,000. This is the only amount of money that we do get from the tribe besides some Johnson O'Malley money, which is designated to the school through the grant written by the tribal council. But any money we get from the casino revenue is, you know, mainly with kids going to ask for donations from the tribal council.
All right, Representative Johnson. And we need to move on because we have the academies and we have people from Duluth and they're out of town and we want to make sure that we get them on. So I'm going to say 5 more minutes and then we need to wind this up.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Unlike Representative Dimmer, I'll only ask one question. And it's actually kind of a follow-up to Representative Dimmer's question. I understand you're certainly in a unique situation when it comes to raising revenue, but is there any plan on the part of the school district or the tribe to somehow become independent of the state for capital resources in the future?
Madam Chair, there's no plan in place right now. The Red Lake Tribal Council is a separate entity that, you know, it has its own laws and treasurer, they have the chairman, they have their own governing body. Technically, they decide, you know, the laws of the Red Lake Nation. The Red Lake School District, you know, we depend on federal, state, and federal, you know, money, grants. We're separate from the Red Lake Tribe. You know, we work with them, but as far as I explained, you know, with the casino, with the kids going over and asking for donations, you know, we have very little handling in what they decide to do within the Red Lake Nation. And usually when it's a decision is made for the Red Lake Nation, it excludes the Red Lake School District. We're not part of that. You know, we are separate under we operate under the state laws.
Now, district. I understand you're separate, but you're educating their children, right?
Yes, we're educating their children, and I believe in the treaties from 1889, you know, the treaties that we signed, you know, one of the things that, you know, that the government promised was the education of our children as part of that treaty. In the 1889-86 treaty, we gave up a lot. And in return, you know, one of the things the government promised us was to educate our children, to help us educate, and to help us meant, you know, by financial revenue meetings with you know, giving like CFL, Department of Education, you know, meeting with those people and to get them those programs are giving us assistance.
Sure, I understand that. I would feel better if there was some sort of long range plan to work with the tribe on that. There isn't.
Madam Chair,
yes.
May I comment just a bit?
Yes,
for us to be independent, it would seem to me that we'd probably have to abrogate the right of a state public school system.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen in the past of the boarding schools, the BIA, there is no part, and the federal government does not fund the projects and the programs. And this is one of the things that the folks back in the 30s when they established the independent public school district, which was first in Red Deep, where all of the town sites and the tax lands was. And this is, I think, is one of the major areas in there. And Madam Chair, I just like to reemphasize one thing in regarding to that. I can remember as a teacher there seeing 3 and 4 Greyhound buses coming up to the BIA agency and loading students on off the boarding schools north or South Dakota, Oklahoma, and across the country. We have 15 students now is all in boarding schools, and this I think really speaks well for the public school system. And we got 1 in Riverside, California, we got 2 in Anadarko, and we got the balancer in Flanders, South Dakota. And I think this really speaks well for the independent school district.
Representative Slaughter.
Madam Chair, members, and for the testifiers, you know, this November I was able to tour 4 tribal schools, Fond du Lac, Boys, Fort Mille Lacs, and Grand Portage, which all have brand new schools, beautiful schools that were funded through their casinos and partly through tribal greening, which their tribal councils had made a decision to support. They had early childhood programs, they had after school programs, they had better programs than we had at my school. At most of these schools. And so I find the comparisons interesting that the other 4 tribes, and I know each of you are sovereign nations, could have brand new, beautiful, big schools, but then than it there that isn't there. Is there, and I'm just following up on Representative Johnson's question, will the tribal council, have you approached them about supporting this?
Madam Chair, part of the party, representative, part of the process, yes. We meet with the councils. They're part of our planning group. But if you look at the finances of what we see that's in the paper, they're barely able to meet their debt service. Mm-hmm. Barely able to meet the debt service. And we certainly would not want to, and we suggest strongly, don't rely upon unrelated funds where you put up a half a shell and have to wait another 10 years and the children are left out. And I just, this is not... The other tribes that you mentioned, Fond du Lac, yes, they're doing very well. They got the per capita payments. Boys Fork is doing well up at Vermilion. And Grand Portage is doing well. None of them doing as well as Mystic or Treasure Island, but you've got small numbers compared to when we got like 9,000 members, tribal members. And this brings out one of the other points, one of the other representatives' questions. We do have students, and several of them that are not enrolled members of the Red Lake Band in the school districts, but one of their parents may be enrolled, but the child may be from Navajo, may be from Ogallala, could be from Standing Rock or Leech Lake, White Earth. They could be from the different tribes. So we do have a multiple number of various reservations represented by our students and youth.
Okay, at 10 after, I think what I'm going to do, if you have some questions for the folks, would you please just ask them after this is over? We really have to move on. We had 3 people, but I'm going to just cut the conversation short. Thank you. I really appreciate you coming, and we will certainly be looking at the background and talking with you further about some of the funding requests. And if you have questions that you feel the committee, and this is directed to the committee members, if you have some questions that you want us to raise with them, please, you know, let me know, and we'll make sure that we raise them and try to get answers back to you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I want to thank you, thank your committees very, very much, and you all have a standing invitation. Come and visit our Red Lake schools. We'd really appreciate that. Maybe that bus, Mr. Cranky, could make a tour up north for him.
Uh-huh.
Madam Chair.
Actually, it would be good to go up there. I've been up there myself, and it would be good to, you know, if members want to go up there sometime.
Madam Chair, they have a really good basketball team.
Pardon, what did you say?
I said Red Lake has a really good basketball team.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you. We want to have Duluth come up.
Thank you.
We're kind of taking these in descending order of distance. while they're coming up, would someone like to move the minutes of April 15th? That's a long time ago. Do you remember Representative Dabney, if you were even here?
With a photographic memory.
Okay. Are any additions or corrections? If not, the minutes, all in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Opposition, the minutes are approved. The minutes of February 3rd, we moved to from April to February. Representative Johnson, would you like to move the minutes?
I so move.
All right. Any additions or corrections? Not all in favor, say aye. Opposition? Somebody want to approve the minutes here? Say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The minutes are approved. Pay attention. All right. Welcome, Duluth.
Thank you. I'm Kathy Bogan, and I am the Grant Community School Collaborative Program Director. I want to let all of you know what an honor it is to be here to represent the collaborative, its programs and constituents. Madam Chair and members of the Educational Finance Committee, I believe you have before you a handout that's entitled A Place to Grow. I'm going to take this opportunity to kind of move a little bit through the handout, and we'll be following that as a format or an outline, perhaps to expand on some areas that you may have questions about. First of all, I would like to let you all know that this is an exceptional opportunity for the state to make an investment in the future of our children and our community. The Grant Community School Collaborative came together as part of an initiative of CFL 7 years ago, wherein communities around the state were looking at ways that various agencies, organizations, and citizens could address some of the needs in their community, particularly the very high needs communities. Our community is one such community. It is a part of Duluth that has very high density of population, very high number of rental units in our community. In our school, we're looking at about 78% of our students on free and reduced lunch. 45% of our students are minority students, and we have about 21% are special needs or special ed students. And we had kind of some of the problems that you might expect to come about. The rate of juvenile crime was a concern. The numbers of kids that were being unsupervised, especially young children, having nowhere to go where there was a place where we had adults that were there to care for them. Low academic achievement in the school was cited, and also just general social behaviors where parents were concerned about bullying and kids just really needing to learn some social skills. So we came together as a group, and we have in here listed some of the groups that got together and said, gee, what can we do about this together? Among them were the school principal. I was a member of the PTA at that time. Jay Newcomb, who's sitting to my right, is the service learning coordinator at the College of St. Scholastica, and the college is within a mile of our school. We also had director of the YWCA programs, a neighborhood program called East Hillside Patch that really works with residents to try to solve our own problems. And East Hillside Community Club. So this was just a wonderful, successful, collaborative effort where we said, what can we do? We didn't start off with any money. And we decided that one of the first objectives was that we just really didn't have a location for kids to be. In this entire neighborhood, there is not a community center or a place where we even could have such a gathering place that we thought we needed. And so we began rather quickly to look at how can we think about building this center. And we did submit a couple of grants to the Department of Children, Families, and Learning. Jay will be going on about that a little bit more in our history. But we were successful in receiving a grant for $900,000 3 years ago. And throughout this process, not having the money to actually have a center, what I would like to let you know is that we have not let up in developing the programs. So essentially, we have built programs that we are squeezing into every nook and cranny of the school and a church in order that we can serve the needs of the children. And we are now looking to have a facility that can actually house these programs so that they can be more effective and can be expanded to reach more children in our neighborhood. So that is essentially the background of the programs. I would like to say that they've been highly successful, and some of the outcomes that we've hoped to see, we have indeed, they've come to pass in terms of school climate, academic achievement, attendance of students. And so I'm going to hand it over to Jay to talk a little bit about more about the collaborative and the involvement of the College of St. Scholastica in helping to make these programs a success.
Ms. Bogan, before you go on, we do have limited time, and I wanted to get a question in. You said 3 years ago you got a grant for $900,000. Mm-hmm. How come you didn't spend it and use it and get it going?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Julio Almanza. I'm the superintendent of the schools in Duluth. And 3 years ago, we were, as a board, engaged in dealing with what other, a lot of other school districts are doing, and that is consolidation. We have a declining enrollment. And one of the schools that was being looked at for consolidation was Grant. Through that whole process, we did not want to commit to a building project where we would not be using the building.
Okay. That answers the question. Thank you. All right. Mr. Newcomb?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jay Newcomb. I'm the Service Learning Coordinator for the College of St. Scholastica, and I also am serving as the Chair of the Advisory Board for the Grant Community School Collaborative. A little bit more history that Kathy was talking about. We really began the collaboration as youth-serving agencies, trying to build assets for youth in the community. And we soon realized that we needed to do more than that, that we needed to be able to include families and even community. And so while our focus has always been on children, our approach has been whole community approach. And the college is a big part of this. We really feel that we should be an asset to our community and participate in it. The addition that we're asking for would really serve three purposes. It would function for the school directly as a place where we can have concerts, powwows, other events where the whole school is invited. Right now our gym is too small, we can't all fit. It would allow us to do more and varied after-school programs. And finally, it would allow us to be really a community school because we could design spaces that would be appropriate for adults to use as well as kids. Right now, everything is the elementary school model. So I think that it is a good investment in that part. And I just wanted to speak a little bit about the commitment that the college has made to be a partner in this. The college does have three major partnerships through our service learning and community collaboration programs, and clearly Grant Community School is our biggest partnership. It served well for the college for a service learning program. We send students down to participate in after-school programs. We have about $10,000 worth of work-study money that we use to hire coordinators of students who work in Grant School to bring more school, to bring more college students down. We participate in the Reading Partners program, which brings a reading partner to every child in the school. I believe there are about 70 faculty, staff, and students this year from Scholastica who go down and participate in that program. Staff get release time from the college to do that. And my time, I spent lots of time working in this collaborative, especially before we were able to hire any staff. I was able to function as sort of the coordinator of the collaborative and write proposals and grants to get us started. So I think that this is a great investment. The partnership with the college is very solid, as it is with other agencies. We have been nominated for the Jimmy Carter Collaborative Partnership Award in the state of Minnesota for our collaboration between the college and the Grant Community School Collaborative. So thank you for your time in considering this.
Let me finish up what has changed, because if our decision back in 2000 was not to go ahead with it. We have moved ahead with our planning process. We have, in fact, had a planning meeting last night in which the board has reaffirmed. One of the things that has happened has been, as we've looked at consolidation, we've looked at also what works. Duluth is an urban district, but it is also a rural district. We have 332 square miles. 48 of those square miles are actually in our urban center. We have the same issues that Minneapolis and St. Paul has. I spent 22 years in St. Paul, and I can attest to that fact. There is a difference, though. Duluth, as an urban district and rural, is a successful one. I am proud to tell you that none of my schools are in needs improvement. In the year 2000, one of my schools was. That was Grant. It was cited by the end of that first year, we had made the progress. Given the state regulations, we could not get off until the second year. That second year, we also made the progress, and Grant is now a three-star school. We have four-star schools, and we have five-star schools. We also have the same issues that our Franklin Magnet has right in your backyard. Lincoln Park was one of our schools that early on took advantage of that youth program, and we created a community center at Lincoln Park for the neighborhood. That, in fact, has shown us that these collaboratives make a significant difference in the lives of kids. What goes on after school in the programs makes a significant difference and allows us to be more successful. 2 years ago, the board made a commitment that regardless of what we do in terms of a K-6 program at Grant, there will be a continued commitment to use that facility for educational purposes in our school district. It is needed in our community, and that commitment has been made by the board and was basically reaffirmed last night as they told us to look at other options in terms of consolidation.
So, Superintendent Almanzo, that was my question. Are you saying that this building may be closed in the future as a K-6, but it'll still be open for other reasons?
It'll still be open either as an early childhood center, which our community could need. The commitment that we've made to the department as well as to our community is that we will continue to function with this building as an educational setting for the community.
But Superintendent Almanzo, if the building isn't going to be used for K-6 anymore, or is it going to be for a while or not, or is it going to be closed?
Right now the board has, and I cannot tell you what they will do next month, but I can tell you right now that the board has not agreed to close that building for next school year.
For next school year.
If, in fact, we were to close, one of the options was to use it as an early childhood center, still serving the community. One of the things, and if I may help you to understand, while the school serves 250 students in that school, the after-school program serves over 350. Because we have options in our school at the elementary level, some of our kids go to other schools, but when they come back, they go to this school for services.
I'll say that again. How many students do you have?
We have 253 students currently.
And then how many attend after school or other?
350 plus.
Okay, so my question would be, if it is closed as the K-6, would you be able to remodel the gymnasium, do some of those things, and use some of the other existing space that maybe now is going for K-6, along with your early childhood, and not necessarily have to put a second floor on and maybe do it for a little bit longer?
The building actually has three floors.
Okay, well, okay.
So, no, we would continue to use the building for a more extended early childhood programs that we have at another site. We would need at least 9 rooms for that, and they would fit into that, still allowing for, with the remodeling, the full community use. Our gym is very small for the community, and our lunchroom is also very small. This would allow us to make better use for the community.
So, Superintendent, I'm not being difficult. I want you to understand this, but we've got to ask the hard questions. If you expand your early childhood there, would there still be classroom space left? If we gave you money to remodel your gymnasium and your cafeteria space without having to build an additional, would you have enough existing space then to, you know, do what you want to accomplish, continue making this a community center? Would you be able to do that?
Yes,
you know,
we would.
You want to obviously remodel your gymnasium space to make that more manageable, mm-hmm. and you're saying your food area or cafeteria. Those seem to be critical, and then you need some more classroom space. But if you're going to close that building for K-6, move in, you know, more early childhood, you know, would you still have enough space then for your what you want to do here with your collaboration if we just gave you the money for the other?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? And And Superintendent Almanzo, how much would that be versus the $1 million? Do you have any estimates as to how much that would be?
Well, I could not. I'm not an architect, and I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Okay.
The $1 million that we were using for is more, it was to, in fact, be able to continue the programs during the day when we had it for school. We would still be using it for early childhood. In terms of a different modification, I really couldn't tell you at this time.
Okay. Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question and a comment. I'll start with the comment. Again, I have a difficult time with this as well, I think, as some other members do. I come from an area that's not economically advantaged either. County north of me is Todd County, the second poorest county in the state of Minnesota. Just west of me, a couple miles, is Polk County, and I represent that area too, and that is probably the fourth or fifth economically of course, county and state of Minnesota. But we just went through, I was the chair of it, we put a community center up in our little town of Freeport. Cost us probably about $550,000. We put a tennis court up, we put a park up with it and everything else. We did not use $1 of state money, not $1 of federal money, not $1 of county money, not $1 of city money. It can be done. We did it on a volunteer basis. We got people to donate to it. It was a good cause. We use it for kids' programs in town. I started a kids' basketball program over there, which I still run. We do a kids' wrestling program, which I did for 28 years, all on a volunteer basis. I think you're going through the wrong source for funding. I also served in the city councils for years, and I know that city councils have monies appropriated, both federal and they used to at the state level, for recreation. I think you should be at your city council meeting asking the city of Duluth for this fund. Have you done that?
Madam Chair, Representative, when we started our discussions, we started with the CFL and the Youth Enrichment Programs. Through that process, we were not able to utilize the money. We have approached the city, and we do a number of collaborative things with the city. But in all honesty, our city is not in a position to do any of the building for us for community centers.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heidgerken kind of asked some of my question. I would have asked much more quickly than that. But kind of a follow-up to that, have you done any efforts to raise private funds or any other sources of income for this?
In our last proposal to CFL, we did include $100,000 from the local Ardeen Foundation, which at that time had pledged that they would contribute to the program. After the delay of 2 years, they said we have to rescind that offer and we would need to start over again in seeking that kind of funds.
Madam Chair, Representative, have you made any efforts since then for any other grant funds or private funds?
No, we haven't, because the state funds have been the basis of what we're doing, and I guess we have to see where that's at first.
That's essentially what I was going to ask about. Thank you.
All right. If there are no further questions, Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, if I can maybe just offer the other side of the fence kind of perspective on this, and I think Representative Heigerken certainly raises some good points here, but we also have had a history as a legislature in investing in precisely the kind of activities that I think the school district here is proposing, because we understand the importance of the connection to that, to K-12 outcomes. And I think if you were coming here just asking for a community center, you know, I'd be more skeptical. But what you, I think, have done is demonstrated a history of connecting those activities to your outcomes in your schools, and in your present, at least in your, you know, this nice piece here, you talk about research-based school after school summer programs involving families, children, homework, health, you know, enrichment activities regarding science, computer, arts, etc. And there is a body, I mean, there is a strong body of evidence connecting all of those to enhanced K-12 performances. And that's a legitimate debate, obviously, for us to have in terms of whether that's a state obligation to invest in that. But clearly, there is a strong connection in terms of K-12 outcomes, which ultimately is one of our greatest goals as state legislators. I do have a quick question, though, for you. We used to fund, until this last session, after-school enrichment, an after-school enrichment program that came out of the Early Childhood Committee when I served on it several years ago, precisely because of this notion of the connection between those activities and K-12 outcomes. Does your, because I don't know a whole lot about, but does your work flow out of those collaborative efforts? I'm sure Duluth had state dollars in those programs, and it's filming closely. A little bit about the history.
If I may, Chairman and Representative Mariani, Duluth lost about, I think it was $600,000 of the after-school enrichment monies. Yes, and in fact, they were part of that whole development. And it was in recognizing the benefits that it had that we were able to still, without some of that money, continue some of those programs that we still are running today. But they do make a difference in the education of children, which is our primary goal, which is why the district was willing to commit to continuing the utilization of that building to keep those same successes going.
Thank you. Representative Mariani, while you have the floor, there, I'm going to let you do some talking too, but I do want to, on February 12th and 13th, there's going to be a program called Building Alliances for Student Success, and it's going to be focused on the achievement gap and having a really important dialogue about that. I have decided as a committee chair that if someone wants to go to it, particularly on Friday, they're talking about that this would be a good time for school board members, legislators, community leaders, and education practitioners to attend to talk about some of the issues surrounding the achievement gap. And so if you look on the thing, it's if you want to go on Friday, they offer a breakout, different breakout costs, and I would encourage people if they want to go, I'd be willing to, I will pay for the Friday only package, that's the $75, so we don't meet on Fridays, and that would be a good opportunity. It's from, what time does it start, Carlos?
Madam Chair, I believe, let me quickly, on Friday we're starting at 8:30.
Okay.
How
long does it go, do you know?
Friday day will be till noon.
Okay.
We'll have a morning plenary where the organization that I work with, the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership, will issue its second State of Student of Color report. We're going to have a response from Commissioner Yackey to the report. I just met with her yesterday, and she was pretty enthusiastic about her report. We're also going to have a higher ed response from the Chancellor of the Minsky system. There'll be a Q&A, and then there'll be a breakout sessions that you mentioned. And then we're going to close the day with an address from the interim superintendent of the Minneapolis schools, Mr. David Jennings.
So I would really encourage, thank you, Carlos, and I'm so glad that you mentioned it. So I would encourage anybody that wants to go. It's at Kauffman Union, okay, over at the university campus. So if any of you want to go, I'd be glad to pay the $75 cost for that day, because I expect you to be here on Thursday in committee. But I do want to encourage you, because I think that that's the day that would be very appropriate for some of us to go. And I've got it on my calendar, and I'm planning on going. Superintendent Almanza.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would be more than happy to provide you data that says you can close the achievement gap. We are doing that in Duluth. And with your support, we will be able to continue that.
Thank you, Superintendent. Appreciate that. Okay, we need to bring up the academies for the deaf and blind and get their request.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I believe there is some language that was copied, a bill draft, just to describe the requests by the academies. First, I'd like to just mention, for those of you who may not be familiar with the state academies, the state academies for the blind, the state academies for the deaf were developed and established around 140 years ago. They are state residential academies for deaf and blind students that educate them, and those students stay there during the week and they are sent home during the weekend. They are two separate campuses which share many support services. Here with me today, we have Linda Mitchell, who is the superintendent of the Academy for the Deaf, as well as the acting superintendent for the Academy for the Blind. You may have recalled in the past, Elaine Sven has been here. She is no longer with the academies. And we have Tom Schainbauer, who is the business manager for both academies. If you have particular questions, I will have you direct them to them. They know everything about the asset preservation and all of those safety improvements and the things that are needed at the academies. But I want to mention that the governor's recommendation for the capital investment bill was $4.2 million in asset preservation. The language you have before you is for $7.3 million approximately, and it is described and broken out. And so I would encourage you to ask questions that you think are important.
Okay. Ms. Mitchell, do you want to just walk through the asset preservation? With that, we'll go far, and then the other two items that you're interested in.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Linda Mitchell, and thank you, Senator Representative Boudreaux, for your introduction. I would like to add a couple of things. We are one state agency, two separate and unique schools. We serve children who are deaf, hard of hearing, blind, visually impaired from 0 to 21. All of our students are on IEPs. These are special education facilities. We are a resource to all of the public school districts in Minnesota, and they access us through the local school districts of residence where the families of the children live. That, with that background, we have been around since 1863 when we were given a $1,500 land grant from the legislators. We have been in Faribault for that 140 years in exactly the same locations that we are still located at. We have 10 buildings, actually 11, on the MSAD campus. One is an original from when the beginnings of the campus were created. It is no longer used. It has a new roof on it. It is used for storage, but it is not used for programs. And on the MSAB campus, we say there are five. However, with our most recent renovation, we have now connected. There's really three because there is now connections between two of them that it's one big building with three wings to it. Our asset preservation requests. The Lyson building is on the MSAB campus, and there are two things. We need a new roof on the Lyson building, and that project is $900,000, and a chiller replacement, which is $250,000. On the MSAD campus, the air quality projects, Smith Hall and Quinn Hall, are both buildings that house school classrooms. The Quinn Hall is an elementary building. Smith is a high school building. Both of those buildings were constructed in the 70s, and I don't know a lot about the mechanics of such things, but I do understand now that the heating system is underneath the building, and this has caused some problems with mold and moisture that settles to the bottom. So we have Smith and Quinn that both have those particular air quality issues. Rodman was built in 1924. That is the dining room, houses the dining room and kitchen on the campus. That too needs a new HVAC system. Our Lauritsen Gymnasium is on the MSAD campus, and it was built in 1932. It needs a sprinkler system, fire protection, which is also listed, then that is $580,000. Asbestos removal, Rodman, again, is the dining room building. That is area in a crawl space where asbestos needs to be removed. So those are the projects that we excuse me, have listed for asset preservation. We do recognize that this is a larger number than we have requested in the past, and part of this has been suggested to us that monies that we have used before from the CAPRA fund are going to be used differently. So they had suggested to us that these should be listed in asset preservation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if everybody got the memo about CAPRA, but there is kind of a change in how they're doing CAPRA versus HEPR, or not HEPR, asset preservation stuff. And so they're asking some agencies to go and do the asset preservation instead of using the CAPRA process, that's the way I understand it. So that's why this looks larger than, as you said.
Madam Chair and committee members, I do want to say that we take our responsibility of preserving the state's assets seriously, and we have to thank you. I can tell you since 1998 we have seen great improvements, and if you have the document with our strategic planning summary and everything included, there is a list of projects that have been funded that have greatly improved the environment. We have new exterior lighting. We've had the electrical system upgraded. Some infrastructure things that have helped a great deal, even though you may not be able to see them. And we really appreciate the support that you have given us over that time. From 1998, when the legislative auditor's report said that our campuses were rated as poor, we have seen great improvement, so we really appreciate that. And we thank you.
Do you want to talk about your other, or did you talk about Noyes Hall and the safety improvements? Those are the two additional ones.
Those are the two additional. And we recognize, Madam Chair and committee members, this is Linda Mitchell again, we recognize the fiscal responsibility that we have in terms of looking at some of our additional requests. Noyes Hall West Wing is the project that was just completed. Noyes is a historic building on the historic registry. The east and west wings have both been renovated, and what we have left is the auditorium in the middle. It does not have a new HVAC system in it, and that is really the piece that is left to do. We recognize that the building is usable, and we use the auditorium all the time for a variety of things, including graduation and pep rallies and the homecoming dance and Hall of Fame banquets, et cetera. What we don't want to see happen, and I can use as an example our boys' dormitory, which is Frechette Hall and was constructed in the 70s. There was not enough money in the project at that time to finish the air conditioning in that building. And what has happened is that we are now 30 years later, and part of the building has air conditioning and part of it does not. And we have window air conditioning in some places and some places that does not. We would like to finish Noyes Hall and have that building completed in terms of its renovation. So that's what West Wing Phase 2 really is the auditorium. Mm-hmm. Then last, there are two parking spaces and road projects, one on each campus, that are safety concerns. We'll talk about MSAB first. They have a dormitory, and then there is a road, and then there is a playground area. And I should say that we have been most appreciative of the support of the MSAB Foundation and outside sources who have funded new playground equipment specifically for sensory-impaired children. We are now in phase two of that project. They are close to having raised the second $50,000 fee that was necessary for that project to be completed. But what has happened is that we want to move that road on the other side of the fence so that we don't have children who are leaving the dorm to get to the playground and have to cross that street. That is the situation at MSAB. At MSAD, it is very similar in that what we would like to do, parking is a problem at MSAD. There just is not enough space. And if we could put a parking lot behind Noyes Hall, we would be able to move the traffic outside of the circle. And if you have ever been to our campus, you know that there is a very large grassy area in the middle of the campus where there is a softball field and play area. And the students from both dormitories have to cross the street to get to that area. What this new road would do would take the traffic outside of the circle.
Okay. That's kind of the request, and as Ms. Mitchell said, the governor has proposed doing the asset preservation and leaving the other two for 2 years from now. And so that will be our discussion as we go forward with our recommendations and looking at how much we want to spend. But I appreciate you coming today, Ms. Mitchell, and I would encourage anyone who has not been to the academies to go down and visit, because it really, and I actually see some of the work that's been done. You know, it's fun to see the progress and see the old pictures of you know, what it looked like before and what it looks like now. And it really is a beautiful facility as far as, you know, just the historical nature of the buildings too. But they do a very good job of educating the children.
Madam
Chair,
are there
any questions that the committee has? Okay, Ms. Mitchell.
I should go on public record as explaining one thing that you're not going to be able to tell from looking at any of the documents here. Our MSAB campus and MSAB buildings get their heat from corrections in Faribault, which is right behind them. With the expansion project that's going on at corrections, they are going to be changing over, and again, I'm not the expert to tell you if it's high pressure or low pressure steam, whatever it was going to change. Had it been something different, corrections would not have been able to continue to supply heat to MSAB, which is currently the situation that we have. We have talked with them numerous times. The decision has been made to stay whichever way it is, high or low pressure. And they have assured us that they're not going to turn the heat off on us, so that the funding for that is in their project monies. And there's no way here. At one point, we thought maybe we should have a placeholder just to let you know that should they change their mind or do something different, we need heat. But at this point, that seems to be taken care of, and we trust that they won't turn the heat off on us.
And I'm sure that Representative Boudreau will be tracking that, too.
Madam Chair, and as you know and committee members know, that is a proposal, the prison expansion in Faribault, and it's not, and it is in the governor's proposal, but nothing is secure at this point. And just to mention the proximity with the campus of the MSAB, Academy for the Blind, is very close in proximity to the Faribault Correctional Facility.
Representative Boudreau or Ms. Mitchell, do you know if something would happen that there wouldn't be the expansion, do they still need to take care of their heating system at the prison, and would that be something that would just be separate that would have to be done?
Madam Chair, that is something that would have to be reevaluated, and I would expect a bonding bill for the next year or so, because obviously the power plant needs to be redone. The prison has its own power plant, and coming from an original regional treatment center campus, all of those things were there, and And the proposal to expand actually does take care of some of the capital needs that would need to be done even if there was not an expansion. And so that's it for another committee, I understand, but it does play into
As long as we, you know, we don't get hit all of a sudden, you know, at the last minute with, oh, by the way, your committee also has to pay for, you know, $3 million heating plant for the academies or something.
Madam Chair, I'll try to avoid that from happening.
Good.
But I need your help, too.
Well, if you, and also if you could just get us the information on what the cost would be if something like that would happen, or if we just need to advocate as a committee for, you know, say the prison expansion doesn't go forward, but something else needs to go forward, let us know so that we can, as members, you know, be working with you on that. All right. Thank you very much. With that, Representative Heigerken, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question here. Nothing was mentioned on enrollment there. I have no idea how many students are there, if you've been going up or down. And the question I have is on page 6 of the handout, the strategic planning summary. I understand about 95% of the funding comes to stay in Minnesota. And it surprised me that only 5% comes from the federal. But when I look at what you have there, you have $410,000 for air handling. You discussed that. $376,000 for fire protection. The generator, $685,000. And for tearing down some buildings for $690,000, wondering if that would be better spent in remodeling. On the next page, page 7, project at a glance. Again, we have more monies there for a chiller replacement, $250,000. Air quality, $850,000 for Smith, $775,000 for Quinn. Air quality for Rodden, $750,000. Fire protection, $580,000. Asbestos removal, $150,000. We're spending a lot of money without putting any buildings up. Oh, wow, that's a lot of money, and we're not getting anything in return outside of a basic overhaul of, I have a hard time believing it would be that expensive to provide heat and air conditioning.
Ms. Mitchell?
Madam Chair and committee members, I do have to say the one thing that has been made clear to me, at least as somebody, and again, and I don't have the maybe the contractors or the mechanics background, but I can tell you that in talking about the structure of the buildings, and I can use our Mott Hall as an example. These are old buildings, but I can tell you in terms of their structure is good. I mean, they're strong buildings. What we built 50, 60, 70, 90 years ago, we built to last. So what has happened is that in terms of suitability, if I can use that phrase, it's probably, at least for us, still cheaper than building a new building, although I can tell you that if I was to go back to Faribault, they'd say, oh, get us a new gymnasium. Well, they'd love to have a new gymnasium, but our gymnasium has been, I mean, it is a strong building. It was built in 1932, but it is not protected with a sprinkler system for fire protection.
And Representative Heigerken, I think probably about 8 years ago I asked the same question that you asked, you know, why are we not building new buildings there and tearing down the old? And at some point, at some decision point historically in the legislature, they decided that they wanted to preserve the campus as it was. The buildings, a couple of them became historical designated sites, which then makes it much more costly to refurbish. But at some point, we've turned the corner, and we've put quite a lot of investment in remodeling and updating these buildings. Now it's to the point where to then go back and build new would be foolish now. Because at some point, you know, historically, that decision was made to keep those buildings as they were and just use them for the students. And so we're down that road now. So now we have to, you know, just make sure that the buildings function well and economically. And so, you know, I'd asked that question a long time ago, too. But we're down that road now. And you know, to stop all of this would, you know, not be prudent.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up again. I understand with the renovation of the demolition of the cottages, where I'm having a real difficult time is the amount of money that we're spending on air quality. And they've got to have the best air quality in the world that spend all that money.
Well, Representative Heidgerken, I'm not an expert on air quality either, but the buildings are big. They are multi-storied. They don't have probably the state-of-the-art windows. I mean, and they have done a lot of window remodeling and stuff like that, but I think you're looking at 1920s, 1930s mm-hmm. building that had different construction and different kind of airflow system than we have now. I mean, you know, I live in a house where you have to open, you know, I open the windows to get airflow and stuff. I have drafty windows, so it doesn't matter. I get less airflow. That's just part of and we had a bill before us the other day that their chiller estimate was $300,000 for a chiller.
Yeah, that was yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they're saying $250,000, so I don't think they're out of the ballpark as far as estimating the cost of chillers and HVAC systems. They're expensive dudes. These people that are in the HVAC business are making money here. So, but apparently they. But and also the. If you do have some further questions, Representative Heidgerken, about technically if this is cost effective, their project manager was not available today. He has a personal family emergency. He is a guru at it. He knows what he's talking about, and he would be more than happy to, talk to you about some of those details to give you some comfort.
One question. How many students did you say?
And I, Madam Chair and committee members, let me explain this. MSAB's numbers are stable. We have been between 55 and 60 students for the last 10, 15 years, and that still remains the same. On the MSAD campus, we have been slowly adding 5 to 10 students every year. In 98, we had 143, and we currently have 170. Now, about two-thirds of our students are residential, and about one-third come from the surrounding area. We have anticipated that a couple of things. What we see happening, especially in outstate Minnesota, is that there just are not specialists. There, obviously, you hear too that there are not as many special education teachers as they need. Well, when you start looking specifically for teachers of the deaf or teachers of the visually impaired, they are very difficult to find, and we even acknowledge that that's difficult. But we are becoming not only an option, but sometimes for outstate districts, the only option. So we are seeing some of our enrollment numbers, we believe, go up because of that as well.
Our time is coming to a close. I just wanted to thank you, Ms. Mitchell. I just wanted to draw your attention. We did have a response from St. Paul School Districts about the compensatory question, and they do get compensatory at the school, at the Crosswinds. Also, some of you started handing in your registration forms for the thing, and I may have opened up a can of worms here. I'm not sure about the process. Usually we have people just submit a reimbursement form after they've gone. In this case, this would be, getting the money in advance. So can you just hold on to your registration forms? We'll check to see what the process is for, either. I don't know if the House Administration tells us that we have to spend the money and then they reimburse, then that may be what it is. And then we'll just have to reimburse you. They may not allow us to upfront the money. So we're going to check on that for you, and then you may just have to register yourselves, and then we'll reimburse you after the fact. But we'll find out, and then Brett will send you an email to let you know. So if you can, we'll just send you a blanket email so anybody that's interested will know the information. Representative Martin.
Madam Chair, we can also invoice. But yeah, we'll certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we'll take care of it. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.